Lemsa Say is a much-loved poet and author in the United Kingdom. He's been awarded an MBE for services to literature and is Chancellor of the University of Manchester, beating one Peter Mandelson for that coveted post. Say was official poet for the London 2012 Olympics and has just received this year's Pen Pinter Prize. His memoir, My Name is Why, tells the story of his childhood. He was born in a mother and baby home in Wigan in the northwest of England to a young Ethiopian mother in 1967 and fostered out to the Greenwood family, who returned him to the care system 12 years later. And Lem Cissé joins me now from studio in Belfast, in fact. And you know, Lem, I was thinking about this. Had things gone differently, I might not be talking to Lem Cissé, poet. I could be talking to Norman Greenwood.
You certainly could, because for the first 16, 17 years of my life, I thought that my name was Norman Greenwood. In fact, Norman Mark Greenwood. So you could have been speaking to him, but you probably wouldn't. I probably wouldn't have been a poet. I would have been a librarian or an accountant or I don't know what I'd have been. But yes,
it's an extraordinary thing. I mean, and I'll talk about the Greenwoods and that situation in a moment, but I'm wondering the moment at which, and this is in the memoir, the moment at which you then, you know, you've called yourself Norman Greenwood, and don't know how you felt about that name or how you felt about Norman Mark Greenwood. You've called yourself that for a long time. Then you see a document that says Lem Cissé.
Documents are really important in my story. And at 17 years of age, the social worker gave me my birth certificate, and he gave me my birth certificate because I was going to be 18 soon, and that would mean I would leave care and I would need my birth certificate as a legal document. And my birth certificate had a different name on it than the name that I knew myself as. He also gave me a letter from my mother.
But yeah, I'll come back to the letter from your mother, but you see this name written down on the birth certificate. You're handed it by Norman Mills, who is one of the big heroes of the book, let's face it, that social worker. He hands you this birth certificate and he says, that's your name there, Lem Cissé. Yes. When you look at that written on a page, are you wondering, who is that guy?
I'm not thinking that, actually. What I was thinking was, this is proof that I've been lied to. This is proof that my mother's been lied to. This is proof that something went wrong at the time of my birth, where there was a deception, and that everything that's happened since then is a result of that deception. So I understood when I saw that my name was this alien name, Lem Cissé, I understood that I'd been cheated from my name, and I believed that my mother had been cheated of me, and that my foster parents had cheated me.
And that's where that other letter comes in.
This is where the evidence was. My mother had me fostered as a child. She had no intention of adopting me. She was placed in a mother and baby home. She was here just to study. She had no intention of staying in England. The social worker gave me to foster parents and said, treat this as an adoption. We'll get her to sign the adoption papers. Don't you worry. His name is Norman. I stayed with the foster parents for 12 years. They taught me how to say the words mum and dad. I was with them since I was 3 months old. And they said they were my parents forever and that my mother hated me, and she must have done to leave me. And then at 12 years of age, they put me into children's homes and said they'd never speak to me again, and didn't. So here I am at 18 years of age, after being in 4 different children's homes, and the last one was a virtual prison, being given a birth certificate that tells me that somebody somewhere has lying. So I immediately took my name, Lem Cissé, and you know, my friends, the few friends that I'd had, they thought I'd gone crazy. Why should my 18-year-old friends understand that I didn't know anybody for longer than a year and a half, that I had no family? I was just the boy from the children's home, and that's where naughty boys go, isn't it?
Yeah. And let me ask you about the second letter that you got on that day, which, if I'm right, it is a letter dated the 4th of July, 1968. Now, you got this letter in what year?
1984.
You see
George
a letter.
George Orwell's 1984.
Yeah. You see a letter from your mother, which
it's
says...
It's from my mother. It's dated 1968, just a few months after I was born. Mm. And she's pleading for me back. She says, how can I get Len back? I want him to be with his own colour, his own people. I don't want him to face discrimination. How can I get Len back, she says to this man, to the social worker, who writes back to her, by the way. I have a copy of that letter, saying, oh, Lem is fine, you know, he's doing well with his foster parents, and we can't give you their address and we can't give you their details, because my mother was asking for their details as well. And my social worker was name was Norman. He'd given me to my foster parents and named me after himself. Mm. My foster parents wanted to call me Mark, after Mark in the Bible, and my final name was their last name, Norman Mark Greenwood. All of that is a lie.
It's extraordinary, you know, and because as I was reading the book, I said to myself, and we were speaking about this on the team, if you saw this in fiction, if you and the documents of your entire time in care are there in the book as well, if you saw this in fiction, you'd say, ah, that's a bit made up, or that's pushing the boat out too far. But you have the documentation to prove it.
And I did.
While you saw the birth certificate and the letter from your mother, while you saw those documents from 1968 in 1982, it took you more time to see lots of the other documents.
Oh, then nobody was giving me my documents. When I got them in 2015, the last insert is my request to see them in 1985 when I was 18 years of age. You know, I looked into the Wiggins policy of open access, which there was none. I found the right clause within Wiggins Council's policy of freedom of information, which there wasn't one in 1984. But still, I couldn't get them. And then I made a BBC Radio 4 documentary in search of them in 2010, in which they said the files had been mislaid by a company called Iron Mountain. And then finally in 2015, I received my files fully.
Yeah. And there are lots of people whose story may not be exactly the same as yours, but who have similar stories to yours in terms of their origin stories, to use the title of the BBC Radio 4 series that you made.
It's happening all over the country. But, you know, we are entering a time where people who have been wronged are demanding to see the records and the institutions that surround or are within our society will by default often, not all the time, but often deny the files. But really, they want to filter them through their lawyers, redact whatever they need to redact. And we just have to lean into this. We have to lean in until we receive the files, until we get the redactions taken away, and so that we can see the truth. The truth. It is nothing more innocent and pure as looking for the truth.
You mentioned, so you lived with the Greenwoods for that early part. There was a very strong Baptist streak in that family, which obviously led to certain religious doctrines being certainly given to you without much debate. But you then went in, you were in three different institutions. Woodfields, Oaklands, Woodend. Trees all over the place here.
Yes, trees all over the place.
From the Greenwood family.
Yes, from the Greenwood family. Gosh, I've never made that link. Of course, the Greenwood family. Yeah. But I've got to say, you know, they were deeply religious, and I'm not against religion, and I'm not against deep adherence to any religion or faith. In fact, it's what human beings need to understand that there is a higher power than themselves. I think that my foster parents were possibly naive to a degree. They tried their best. It was the worst for me, but it was the best. And they basically gave up, and giving up is okay. We all have our problems with family, but they guillotined me from the family. I lost everybody, my mother, my father, my sisters and brothers and my aunts and my uncles and my grandfather and my first girlfriend and my town and my village and my school and my church, and everything that I was relative to was taken away from me and would never speak to me again.
Yeah, because I know that you say in the book, in My Name Is Why, you say that you wrote this memoir in order for your foster parents to show them what happened and, you know, to point out that they had actually stolen memory from you. Has there been any contact? You mean, you talk about brother Christopher, isn't it? You know, you were great buddies, clearly. Yeah. You know, you fought like, like brothers, not cat and dog. But have you had any contact with Christopher? Indeed, isn't Helen is the sister's name as well?
Helen and Sarah. No, none of them have ever contacted me, and I've tried in various ways to contact them over the years. And I met my brother once when I made good to forgive my foster mother fully, and to meet her. And I went to meet her in London a few years ago to meet her face to face. And I saw my brother Christopher for the first time. And I must say to you this, that as I was seeing my foster mother to forgive her properly face to face, Steve Coogan called me on the telephone. And I've known Steve since early days in his career. Mm. And to this day, I saw him at the BAFTAs the last time we had a proper good chat. But I never told Steve that he did. But it's what Steve did with Philomena.
Yeah, in the film.
Was to bring the idea of the mother and baby homes, which were all over England in particular. He brought that idea to the fore, where women who were pregnant, vulnerable, and on the bridge between childhood and adulthood were asked to make this administrative decision to sign the adoption papers at their most vulnerable. Many of them wouldn't have heard the word adoption before. So it was just coincidental that Steve called me on the walk down that road to meet my mother. But I did meet her to forgive her, and I saw my brother, and he said, I can't remember anything, Lem.
Wow.
That's all he said to me, because I looked at him like, I cupped his face in my hands, I was like, Christopher. And he said, you know, I can't remember anything. And all I can assume is that it's quite traumatic for their birth children to think that if they fall out with a child, they just disappear. With another child, they disappear. And I think my foster parents did a job on all of the family to erase the memory of me and to tell them that I'd rejected them.
Yeah. I mean, that was that early experience. Then there were really difficult experiences in the various institutions you were in, particularly Wood End, which you referred to. In fact, it was a remand centre and a care centre all rolled into one, but I'm guessing that...
It was the short, it was the end of the short, sharp shock era. Mm. And this was just full of men who saw all these boys as being naughty and indeed in need of punishment. And this is a way of killing the human spirit inside a child and telling them that they are intrinsically bad. And I actually hadn't done anything wrong, anything of note, and certainly nothing that had that warranted imprisoning me.
Lem Sisse there speaking to me about his memoir, which is called My Name is Why, and it's published by Canongate.